This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, a Joy 94.9 podcast. This podcast was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. To support the production of content like this, donate at cbf.com.au.
Well, we've got a feel-good feature here to counterbalance some of the more negative stuff in the news. Recently, Ash Christ is a transgender filmmaker in the United States who's making an independent comeback into the world of documentary filmmaking after being held back by transphobic exclusion from the media industry in her hometown. She's recently produced a web series and currently has a Kickstarter-backed documentary film in the works, both focusing on the furry fandom.
My name is Ash Christ. I am a filmmaker, a YouTube personality by the name of Ash Coyote. I am also a trans filmmaker. I focus in on LGBT issues, and I have been working in the film industry now for about 12 years.
Ash Christ is a YouTuber and videographer from the furry community. She recently made a name for herself with an independently produced web series available on YouTube titled The Fandom, which showcases aspects of the furry community to a general audience.
A furry is a fan of anthropomorphic characters. Furries often have an animal representation of themselves. This is called a fursona. My filmmaking career started pre-transition, kind of in my older life. I had come across a commercial shoot that was being done on my university, and the grip truck needed help. So the guys who do the lighting and like the rigging and kind of set up stuff and tear it down. And I ended up getting a job with them and spending the whole summer learning to light and stuff and fell in love with film. From that point on, I kind of apprenticed and jumped around. I ended up getting a start in indie film production sometime in 2008-2009. We did our first indie film, which was a project about The Creeping Terror, which is the worst film ever made, supposedly. And we kind of shot it, knocked it out, had a festival run, and then the rest was kind of history from there. Then around 2015, I came out as trans. And unfortunately, where I live, which is a town called Colorado Springs, it's very, very, very conservative. We have Focus on the Family, which is kind of a LGBT hate organization, a New Life Church, which is like this huge mega church kind of thing. And unfortunately, a lot of the media that kind of comes through, so like a lot of my work and bread and butter work that I kind of survived off of, dried up because a lot of our clients were tied to these organizations. So around 2016, I kind of had to toss in the towel, so to speak, for my career and just kind of go through transition. Transitioning in general is like a really difficult process. I mean, it involves stripping away a lot of elements of self. And when you go through transition, it's kind of inevitable that that's going to be in the public eye. You'll get those funny looks, you'll get people questioning or misgendering or just generally being rude to you. And in a conservative town, that tends to be amplified. So my experience transitioning here in Colorado Springs specifically was a very challenging one. I would often find myself in situations where I didn't necessarily feel safe or comfortable, but you kind of have to work through it because as a trans woman, that is just, I guess, kind of a part of your life. You will have to go through that in order to get to the other side, to get to a point where you're comfortable, where you're happy. And even in towns like this, it is possible, though my potential for work in multimedia advertising and film, specifically on the level of Colorado Springs, is probably quite limited, but outside of it, like Denver, the surrounding areas, California, stuff like that, it's still very much a possibility. When you're an artist and you do something for so long, I think you are kind of tied to it. It becomes a part of you. It's a part of, you know, like how you express yourself. Pre-transition, I had a lot of difficulty kind of expressing that side of myself. And you can see that in the films and stuff that I worked on and made. In a roundabout way, what transition did for me was it helped me open up to who I am and become a more introspective filmmaker. my 3 years in absence, you know, like I kind of continued doing other artistic endeavors and trying to explore what possibilities there were out there for me in the world as a trans woman. And I ended up coming back across film through a friend, happenstantial meeting of a friend who's now my co-director on the upcoming film and just all around awesome guy, also queer. We met and we got to talking and I realized that film was something that I never lost my passion for. I started to pick up a camera again and we soon had a web series and a feature film in the works.
The thing about furry is that it can be anything to anybody. There's so many definitions for what it can be to somebody, and that just attracts such a wide breadth of people.
At a very young age, when I was like 12, 13, I started to like realize my interest in, you know, not straight things, I guess. But I always kind of pushed it away.
It's because of this community that I understood that I wasn't, you know, like, you know, straight, for example.
So in the middle of editing The Phantom, the series, so that's the web series that we made, my husband and wonderful partner, producing partner, kind of came to me with this idea that the history of the furry fandom is kind of largely not represented in any form of media. I mean, we see a lot of the superficial elements of the fandom existing out there, you know, like fursuit photos, YouTubers, people kind of talking about what furry is today, but we don't get a lot of that historical background and context to our community. To be completely honest, I did not know a whole lot about our history at that point either. I took it upon myself to start researching. I read several books, went through articles, kind of explored the origins of our community, and discovered that there's quite a very, very intriguing story present there. For example, most people don't realize this, but the fandom has its origins in the late 70s. It spans all the way through the 80s. Our first convention was in 89. We exploded in the early 90s with the advent of the internet, and kind of the rest is where we are today. The idea just kind of built and built. So like we're in the middle of this edit, working through The Phantom, the series, and I've started researching this a little bit on the side, and I come to my editor and I'm like, hey, I think this is a really big story. I think that we could actually pursue this as a feature film. So we sat down, I think it was in the middle of the edit for episode 3, and we decided we were going to make a Kickstarter campaign. We put together the stuff. We talked to a few friends who had experience doing Kickstarter and got some outstanding advice for producing this and putting it out there. And then we got it up and started the campaign.
Asha's Kickstarter campaign for a documentary was met with a lot of enthusiasm from fans of the web series. However, it was also the target of a bizarre anonymous flagging campaign in an attempt to hurt the prospects of the documentary ever meeting its funding.
We had started a social media campaign to kind of announce the Kickstarter and really show people what we're about. So the series was kind of a precursor to the film in a way of trying to prepare our audience for our approach and show them what we were interested in doing and the stories we were interested in telling. Come the release of the second episode, we started to see a significant drop in our metrics and we weren't quite sure why. On my social media accounts, things just stopped appearing. Interactions started to decrease a lot. I mean, at first I kind of was like, oh, maybe people aren't as interested in this as I thought. And then it was brought to my attention by a friend that my account was experiencing what they had dubbed a shadow ban. So essentially, my account wasn't showing up in the search results, and unless somebody was following me, they couldn't see any retweets from my account, and all my multimedia, so videos and photos that were posted, were flagged as NSFW. Our guess is that it was probably like some group of like angry TERFs or something like that, because they tracked our hashtag, and they ended up hitting a few other trans and LGBT hashtags. When that was brought to our attention, so this was around the release of episode 3, when we finally started to discover that this was a thing, we immediately tried to take action. So we had contacted Twitter and we were like, hey, you know, like this is going on. Twitter has supposedly an LGBT support Twitter account called Twitter Open. And we contacted them and nobody got back to us. And then I tried to go through their support and their back end. Same thing. We sent out countless support tickets trying to get somebody to respond. And eventually, we started to notice a trickle effect. So now it wasn't just me who was getting shadow banned, but it was every single person associated with the project. So the main people who spoke out in the project, who participated in the interviews, folks who had interacted with my Twitter and retweeted stuff, they were all getting shadow banned. And it kind of all snowballed to a point at which my account was completely locked down and locked out. My Twitter account got suspended, and I was basically locked down mid-campaign for about 3 days with no ability to get any form of recourse, no ability to promote what we were working on, and no ability to, of course, discuss or showcase the Kickstarter as well. So it kind of stalled our whole campaign at that point. Eventually, we did have an employee from Twitter who had some connection with the LGBT group. This was about after, like, I would say about two and a half weeks of dealing with this, get in contact and fix the issue for my account. But most of the accounts that got hit are still down. This issue has not been resolved. And almost every single one of these accounts is LGBTQI. I mean, I don't know. There's no answers. There was no discussion from Twitter about it. And it just seems to be a systemic issue across platforms, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter.
In spite of this attack, Asha's fans and community rallied behind her and the rest of the production team working on the web series and the documentary. Support was outpouring, with hundreds of people condemning the attack and spreading the word about the campaign, encouraging donations from anyone who could help with the crowdfunding.
I didn't get to see it firsthand because during that time, especially when my account got banned, I had no access to Twitter at all. I did get to see it secondhand through my husband's Twitter account. I was absolutely floored with the support that we got, and I appreciate it so much. I think a lot of times with queer communities, you know, furry being a largely queer community, we do have a sense of togetherness and camaraderie, and we try and, you know, stick up for each other and help each other out when someone's down. And our community certainly came together and rallied behind us to help us through this, and I appreciate them so much for it. Barring any extreme circumstances, this project will be made. It's something that I am very passionate about and I love. You know, it's come hell or high water, we'll make it. But there have been little hiccups and you know, like, road bumps along the way, but we will be trying to make this as timely and as fast as possible. Right now, the challenge is just getting out there and shooting it. I mean, as soon as we have the funds, we will be out there in the field, we'll be shooting, we will be getting everything that we need. We got a fantastic animator working with us, an incredible editor, he has an Emmy Award. We have an incredible composer who's going to be composing the score for us. All of these people working with us are LGBT themselves, artists and creators, members of our own community that are kind of coming together to work with us. So it's just been a really exciting process. It is kind of an interesting thing to explore because, I mean, like I said, the fandom has kind of existed since the late 70s. And kind of cascaded it through the 80s and 90s. And I found that, especially my research and my own experience with the community, since it is a largely LGBTQ space, and a safe space at that, that allows us to explore ourselves and express ourselves in ways that we find meaningful, I kind of find it very unique and special. It's kind of grown to be something more than a quote-unquote fandom. It's a real artist community, maybe a movement, maybe a subculture, but we definitely have something very unique and special here.
That was Ash Christ speaking to Nick on air tonight, Kamenya Sandri from The Informer. If you want to know more about Ash's work, her web series is called The Fandom, and you can find it on YouTube. This is Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.